Morning. Scripture reading this morning is from the Gospel of Matthew. It's chapter 10 in the Gospel of Matthew, verses 24 to 39. Let me just read that for us. A disciple, this is Jesus speaking, a disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher, and the slave like the master. If they've called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing is secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I will also acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will deny before my Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set man against father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. So I had a really tough time working on this sermon. In fact, this was a scripture I was going to preach on a couple weeks ago when I was sick and was unable to attend, and I was going to preach on something else. And then Louise emailed, Micah, could you please preach on the scripture that you were going to preach on before? So I was like, well, gosh, Louise, if you insist. I had a tough time working on this sermon 2 weeks ago. I never wrote anything on it. And this week, I was up late last night, just staring at the blinking cursor. What do I write about this? And the reason it was tough to write this sermon is because I can't find any real line of relevance between the situation that Jesus was speaking to then and our situation now. In our scripture reading this morning, Jesus is preparing his disciples as he's about to send them out on their first solo mission among the towns of Judea. They're about to travel without Jesus, preaching to their fellow Jews in each place. So they've been apprenticing with Jesus, and now they're going to do it on their own, or at least two by two, perhaps. So Jesus predicts that as they go out and they proclaim the good news of Jesus, of God's kingdom, and seek hospitality from those in the places where they visit, Jesus predicts they're going to face great difficulties and find themselves rejected in many cases. Looking into the future, Jesus predicts that his disciples will be persecuted, judged by magistrates, and even martyred for preaching the gospel. And in anticipation of those hard days and years ahead, because it really does feel like Jesus is looking beyond the current mission even, it feels like he's talking to disciples who will follow. Giuseppe, could you mute, please? As he looks ahead, he reassures the disciples that God is standing with them, and that just as God is aware of every sparrow that falls, he's even more aware of the needs of human beings. And despite all the challenges, God stands with those who seek to follow him, and especially with those who face trials and suffering for the truth. Jesus encourages the disciples, but he also warns them. Following Jesus will mean being separated from society and even their families. In a time when membership in an extended family was the ultimate form of security and identity, to be divided from father, mother, sister, brother was the most disruptive, frightening thing imaginable. I try to think of what it would be like for us to experience something like that today, in our vastly more individualized society, where frankly a lot of us don't talk to our families much, really. What would that be like? Well, imagine if following Jesus could make you lose your U.S. citizenship. Or imagine if being a Christian put you at risk of fines and imprisonment and even execution. It's hard to imagine. And that's a big reason I've been struggling with this passage and how to preach it in our context today at Berkeley Friends Church. Because in many ways, objectively speaking, we live in one of the freest societies in human history. We and hundreds of millions of other Americans are free to practice our religion without fear. We have enormous latitude. We can believe and profess and live out our lives how we choose to. And we have generations, you know, this isn't happening by accident. We have generations and generations of our spiritual ancestors, including many American Quakers, to thank for this religious liberty. In so many ways, times have never been better for those who want to live out their faith, thanks to the hard work put in by hundreds of years of people. So it's hard to imagine, for me, what real persecution would look like for us. It's hard to envision a country where our faith would be radically separating us from society, where confessing Jesus would mean real dire consequences. We're so free to do just about anything we want, Jesus or not. And our context is so different from the context into which Jesus originally preached the words of Matthew here. But it's not like everything is bliss. We have our own challenges. The early church had its challenges, and that's what Jesus is speaking into, and they lived in a time of great religious tumult. But we live in a time of soul-numbing religious irrelevance. Sometimes I wonder if the reason we are able to have such great religious liberty in this country, such expansive freedom, is that our faith no longer really matters to the ordering of our society. There was a time, not too long ago, that questions of religious doctrine were considered quite consequential for this country. There was a time when holding fast to a certain view of God and what Jesus has done could cost you a great deal if you had the wrong idea. There were Quakers who were executed in colonial America for refusing to back down and preaching the gospel. There were Quakers who died for refusing to serve in the Civil War. Today, there are many Quakers and, well, not many, but there are some. There are some Quakers and there are some Christians of conscience who have been imprisoned for disrupting the American empire and its production of nuclear weapon systems. But when I turn my eyes to my own life, and when I look around at much of the American church, I don't see anything like that. I don't know where to locate a faith that truly brings a sword, as Jesus puts it. I don't see a Christian faith that separates us from society, that draws a line between us and the people and institutions that define us. I don't know where to go to find a gospel that forces me to choose. The great struggle of my life as a Christian has increasingly become grappling with the apparent irrelevance of my faith. The fact that American society seems perfectly capable of accepting my faith and my practice of it and simply continuing on, unfazed, without any need to challenge me, because I'm not a challenge. And Jesus warns us not to fear those who threaten us, but to rather trust in God for protection, identity, and ultimate vindication. But I don't feel threatened. My faith doesn't seem threatening. It seems invisible. what to do about this. Certainly can't be that we are called to seek out conflict for its own sake. Just because society isn't attacking us doesn't mean our faith is invalid. Even if people did persecute us and mistreat us, it wouldn't necessarily mean that our faith was true. We could just be jerks. Yet there's something suspicious about a Christian church that fits so comfortably in the land, that faces so little resistance from a society filled with homeless encampments, gleaming towers of commerce, and stockpiles of nuclear weapons. And so I ask myself, what business do I have being a follower of Jesus who manages to fit in so well? How do I respond to the assumption that Jesus seems to have in this passage, that the public expression of our faith as Christians will often lead to rejection and even persecution from the society around us? Jesus sent his disciples out. Where am I being sent? Who am I to be received by? Who might reject me? What's the message that God is sending through me? And what's the message I need to hear, even if it's a message that threatens my ability to get along in the society of steel, silicon, and polite isolation?